This is a Triangle Classic episode. That means we remaster an old episode. In this case, it's number 5, where we interviewed Jared Plummer, the founder of Two Roosters Ice Cream. He was a fascinating guest, and during the interview, you'll notice he spoke of having a physical retail space in the future. Now, in October 2017, he does have a physical space. It is open and has been quite successful. So we hope you enjoyed the episode, and don't forget to look on Amazon.com for our book, Bend, Break, Hack, Podcasting Without Permission. Thanks.
I have zero computer programming skills.
Me neither.
It's amazing, you know, like, you guys talk so much about hacks and shortcuts and, you know, just all kinds of things. And, I mean, really the services out there like Squarespace really makes it easy.
Yes.
It's amazing.
So you like Squarespace better than WordPress?
That's the one, I kind of fell into the Squarespace platform.
Kind of drag and drop, right?
Yeah, it really is. And I just got an email, they've added like 50 templates just recently.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, it's...
You know, Squarespace will pay to advertise on podcasts sometimes, so maybe we should tag them on Twitter.
Yeah, sure.
Let them know, hey, we brought you up. This first time's free.
I'm telling you, man, they love that kind of stuff. I mean, that's their niche, right? It's like people that are just doing this on their own. And
Yeah. Maybe we'll, so we'll just jump into the introductions really quick.
Absolutely.
And then we'll start up. So this is, as you probably already know, TriangleCast. We're glad to have you back and listening. I'm Jason Juno.
Corey Jeffries, entrepreneur.
And today with us we have Jared. Is it pronounced Plummer?
You got it.
I did. I wasn't sure if it was Plumer or Plumet.
Plumier, yeah.
Plumier.
You know, if you really want to get sophisticated.
So we've got Jared Plummer, who is the founder and owner of Two Roosters Ice Cream. Which, can you tell us a little bit more about Two Roosters as it is today?
Sure. So I don't know where you want to start, but we'll just dive right in. So I started Two Roosters Ice Cream formally, I guess, in 2011. And we actually hit the road with our product in 2014. So it was a long entrance ramp, but it's been a fun process. And we serve the Triangle area with our delicious ice cream. And just about any event that you can think of, we've done. So it's been a joy.
So that includes food truck rodeos, state fair.
State fair, food truck rodeos. Actually, the food truck rodeo that's right outside the frontier where you guys host the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that one. So
yeah.
Anything and everything. We've done birthday parties. We've done graduation parties, weddings, bar mitzvahs. Like, it's,
awesome.
Yeah, everything. Everything
awesome.
You can think of.
How do people tend to find you?
A lot of it's word of mouth, which, you know, that's a tried and true method of advertising and networking. Someone hears about our ice cream and we get a referral. A lot of times, you know, I should say for the listeners, you know, right now we just have a food truck. We've been doing that for 2 years now, and we're actually right in the process of moving into our own brick and mortar space. So we're super excited, and we can certainly dive into that.
Yeah. Corey and I had read that, I think the article's from around like July, August, that you were looking for spaces.
Yeah, it's a long process. And anybody in that retail space, especially in our market in the Raleigh-Durham Triangle area, it's intense right now.
Yeah.
So it's a long process.
Have you picked a location?
We have. And was right before I came on the podcast, I was on the phone with my attorney hashing out some things on the lease, so we're just days away from executing on a space. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, it's terrifying and exciting at the same time.
Okay. Is this a knock on wood situation, or is it for the most part a done deal?
It's pretty much a done deal.
So we're not jinxing it by talking
about
it.
No, we can certainly do that.
Okay.
Yes. And for the people that are curious, it'll be in Raleigh because that's where my wife and I live. Even though now we make all the ice cream in Durham at a fantastic place called The Cookery, which some of you may be familiar with. It's basically a culinary incubator and a startup space for food enterprises. And so that's where we've been operating from since day one.
So would it be too early to give the listeners the location?
Oh, man. Now, that might be taking a step far just because, like, literally we don't have the signatures on the paper. And you know, the sheetrock is not, the dust is not flying yet.
Okay.
So, but I'll be a teaser, and I'll just say in the North Raleigh area.
North Raleigh area.
So you guys hear that. You know where to go get some
in
good
North
ice cream.
North Raleigh area, yeah. That's and great. Also, they can follow everything that's going on with you guys at tworoosters.com, right?
Tworoosters.com, and we do all the socials, so just a quick Google search. But
yep.
And we'll put the links on the website so you guys can follow them there.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll throw a link up there for the cookery as well.
Sure.
In Durham, we'll direct people towards their Twitter. I have so many questions for you.
Sure.
Corey and I were really excited
away,
to have you on.
I love talking about it.
So one of the things we always like to do, and you've listened to the podcast, which super excited to hear about that. One of the things we always like to do is give a shout out to the RTP Frontier. This is this amazing startup space that's right here in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. They let people use conference rooms for free. They let solopreneurs and entrepreneurs just camp out here during the day. And moreover, they host happy hours. They have different events to bring people in. So my question for you, Jared, would be, how did you find out about the cookery, and how did you find out about the Frontier?
Sure. Well, we'll start from the cookery. So, you know, that's one of the big challenges for any commercial food enterprise is just finding a space to do it from, because there are certain requirements from the health department, Department of Agriculture, that would allow you to do some things from your home if you have an inspected kitchen at home versus moving into a commercial space.
Right.
And that was a real challenge because, you know, Two Roosters at inception was just me kind of tinkering at home with the cuisine art, you know, ice cream machines and, you know, sharing it with neighbors and friends and families and being the life of the party, bringing these crazy ice cream flavors around. So when we kind of got serious about it, it was a long process to find that because, yeah, finding a commercial space for food production can be really tricky sometimes, especially if there are multiple entities in a kitchen. I could have certainly built a kitchen on my own, but mm-hmm. being startup, you know, we've funded this thing from my wife and I's purse. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, finding that was just not in the cards. That was not even an option. So, yeah, we had heard about the cookery just from kind of the food truck scene. We knew some trucks that were there. And we actually followed in the footsteps of another great ice cream business in town, The Parlor, which is, they have a shop in Durham now, but we effectively took their spot at the cookery. So they moved out into their own space, and we moved in.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that maybe that's the story for the next ice cream person, as we move out and another one comes in, because in my opinion, there's not enough, you know, there's plenty of room for ice cream always. So that's kind of how we found the cookery was just calling, asking, searching on the internet, as many of us do. And then the Frontier, actually, one of the food trucks invited us to come one day when someone backed out or something. And that's how we ended up coming to the Frontier. So we posted up just outside these doors and served the wonderful people of the Frontier delicious ice cream. So,
and you might have heard on our interview with Mike York, he talked a lot about the concept of synchronicity, of just, some people will say being in the right place at the right time. Other people can attribute it to so many different things. But it's amazing how sometimes these things get rolling, and all of a sudden you get the introductions that you need. You find the clientele. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. And I would say, you know, luck just doesn't happen. I mean, you've got to be out in the marketplace. You've got to be putting things out into the world, just very much like TriangleCast. You know, you've got to be at least trying to do something in the world to make a difference. And, yeah, call it serendipity, call it sovereignty, you know, whatever you want to assign it to, just giving effort. You know, it's amazing what happens when you just put yourself out there and the right people hear about it, or it's the right timing for a certain thing. So it's a little bit of a – it's calculated risk is what I would consider it, like knowing that you have a good idea or product, and then also a little bit of right timing for whatever the outcome might have been.
Yeah, and you actually answered one of the questions we had that we were going to ask later, which was, did you have to find investors? Did you fund it all on your own? Did you bootstrap it? Because as you know, we're a fan of that kind of thing.
Yes.
Corey's business was completely bootstrapped, and he was learning as he went along, and it sounds like you guys paid for this out of pocket.
Yeah, would it be fair to kind of tell the Genesis story?
We want to hear all everything. Of it. Again, I have dozens of questions, so the more that you tell now, the less I've got to ask you about.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm a tried and true American, born and raised in North Carolina, so I ate a lot of my fair share of ice cream growing up, and still do, as many of us do. And, you know, I went to school at NC State, a local school here in town, and actually studied accounting and business, which kind of fell into that. I thought I wanted to be an engineer, but that wasn't in the cards either. So I wound up in the business school, graduated with a master's degree in accounting, and got my CPA license shortly thereafter. So, and I was actually a practicing CPA for about 7 years, doing finance and public accounting. And,
it must have been very exciting for you.
Yes, it was, you know, I can kind of share the side story in a second about how I stumbled into ice cream. But, you know, I think having that business training has definitely helped in the business process. It's kind of like going into a foreign country and not knowing the language. At least having an accounting and business background, I kind of know the language of entrepreneurship and business and startups and et cetera. So I can at least talk the talk whenever situation arises. But so I did that for quite a number of years, and then just kind of got disenchanted, as a lot of people do with, you know, big corporate enterprises. And you know, I've always had this entrepreneurial streak, and it's really funny, Corey, because I can relate to your selling candy on the bus experience, because that's actually how I got started. I got started with when I was in middle school, actually, hustling Airheads. I don't know if you guys have had Airheads.
Yeah, absolutely. They're like the taffy one, and they're in the thin packages.
That's
I think they were like a quarter each or 10 cents each.
Absolutely. So it's funny because I play baseball, and my parents help run concessions, and I would get to go to like Sam's Club and buy bulk packages of Airheads, and then I would take them to school and hustle them. Before the operation got shut down by the vice president or the vice principal, I was making like $20 a day. I mean, it was like serious money for a seventh grader.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a ridiculous amount of money for a seventh grader.
Yeah.
What did you spend it on?
Oh, see, that's the problem. I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem in life. We make money, and then we're like, where the heck did that money go?
Yeah.
So I wish I had some fantastic story about that seed money being for Two Roosters.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not magical.
You invested it in a bond, and 15 years later, there it was. Yeah,
so, you know, the entrepreneurial streak has kind of been alive for a long time. And then, you know, again, kind of fast forwarding until, you know, professional life, just wanted to do something different. And as I mentioned before, I was tinkering a lot with ice cream. Like for me, it was a hobby. Making ice cream, just like many of us have hobbies, making ice cream was one of them for me. And so there's something about ice cream in America with people. There's just something exciting about it, something joyful, something just, I don't know, something so Americana about ice cream that I just enjoy. So that hobby turned into really an obsession. I started really just geeking out over ice cream and recipes and flavors. And then along that time, I met my now wife, and, you know, she just thought it was the craziest thing. Like on our first date, I started dropping bombs about starting an ice cream business and like how much I loved ice cream.
So you, at least you were transparent ahead of time.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
you let her know, you know, hey, this is
ice cream's my thing.
I was very forthcoming. Yeah, and she, you know, surprisingly, ironically, was really into it. So, you know, it worked out. So so that's really how it got started. And then I got, you know, formal training at various places, making ice cream, kind of the ice cream business. And then so all the while, you know, my wife and I were saving money. I was still a practicing CPA, and my wife, she's a financial planner, so we kind of have that finance background. And so she knew that I wanted to do this, and so for a couple of years, we just stashed as much money as we could and kind of ran the numbers of how much this would cost. And, yeah, fast forward 2-3 years later, and we made it happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Was there any large sacrifice that you had to make financially to get enough money together for the business?
Yeah, you know, we extended our tenure in an apartment, you know, rather than buying a house and like kind of, you know, we still do, but living such a simplistic lifestyle that it allows us to take risks in life. And so, I mean, we don't, you know, we're not vagabonds. We're middle class America, you know. Yeah. But it does allow us to pursue our dreams, and it's just having the discipline to do that.
Yeah,
which I think is difficult for a lot of us.
Yeah, well, and that's what we've talked about in the past too. Is like almost that Dave Ramsey philosophy of spending less than you make, or really deciding is what you're doing an investment. And that was one of the other things that was fascinating about Corey. You're talking about what you said. If I get $1,000, I can go buy a TV, or I can invest it in my business and then later get the TV. And I think, and I don't mean to put words in either of your mouths, but it seems to me that after you start investing in the business after a while, you don't care as much about the TV. You care more about this thing that you're building.
Yeah.
Is that right?
True story. 100%.
That's it.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how long the idea of making ice cream was in your mind before you actually pulled the trigger. So you said you started it officially in 2011. You'd been a fan of it for a long time. How many years did you go before you actually said, I'm going to follow my dreams?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think dreams can sometimes have a long life, and then some come 1 week and execution comes just shortly thereafter. I think for me, honestly, well, a lot of people ask about the name Two Roosters. Where does the name Two Roosters come from? Because it's really quirky, and I get it. It has nothing to do with milk or cream or anything. And so it actually comes from my grandmother's house. If you go to our website, on our social media sites, there's a picture, actually, of my grandmother's house. There were two wooden roosters on the facade of her front porch. And as kids, as a lot of Southerners do, we spent a lot of time on that front porch making homemade hand crank, child labor, rock salt ice cream, you know. And so for, you know, half an hour, my cousins, myself, my sister, we would just take turns cranking that old machine. And it was like, it was a lot of work, but we knew that there was something fun that's going to come out of this.
It's funny you mention that, because the only time we did that was when it snowed and we would make snow cream. So that's the only time I remember using the old crank, and we would have to crank and crank and crank and crank. It was like forever. It took forever.
Growing up as a child in New Jersey, I can't remember hand cranking any ice cream. So that must be like a distinctly southern kind of thing to do, huh?
Yep.
I guess I'm missing out. So you guys, even as a child, you recognized that this was superior to getting something in the store.
Oh, 100. I mean, I'm still convinced. And I've made a lot of ice cream. I make it, you know, almost daily. And to me, there's nothing better than homemade from that old hand crank machine. Fresh peach ice cream. Like, that is, bar none, the best ice cream you can have in the world.
Hmm. Sounds delicious.
Yeah. I wish I could replicate that, you know, every day, but there's just something about it. And maybe it's because you have something invested as a kid. You know, you're like spinning and spinning for half an hour. And so you've worked for this thing, and now you get to enjoy it. So maybe there's the true essence of a labor of love for that product. So, So, yeah, so what I was going to say is that, so since a kid, you know, the idea of ice cream has always been around. Again, like most Americans, I enjoy ice cream just as a consumer. But it was more about, like, reflecting on my family life and just that whole family experience of making ice cream and creating memories. And I was like, man, I could tell this story. Like, I could create a brand. I could create a story. I could use this hobby, this creative outlet, to make something bigger. And so it's amazing. People have really, really bought into what we're trying to do. It's really fun.
Awesome. I guess our next question is, we wanted to know what made you act upon it. So if you listen to the recent podcast, I talked about my grandmother being put in a nursing home and kind of a life-changing situation, which made me act upon starting a business. So is there anything that happened in your life, or something, you know, drastic, or, you know, maybe, you know, it was just time for a change? Is there anything you could tell us that just made you say, all right, this is it, I have to go do it?
One more TPS report that had to be turned in. I
mean, that's kind of funny, but actually being in accounting, that, you know, it's kind of true. So, right. Yeah, I love that. I love the reference. I think it was two things, honestly. One, it was a dissatisfaction of the intrinsic nature of work and what I was doing every day. Nothing against, I mean, the CPA profession, the accounting profession, it's a wonderful, high demand, you know, high job opportunity, actually high money making opportunity if you can do it.
Great career path.
Yeah, a great career path. And I still coach, you know, young people that I know today that are accounting majors, et cetera. And I'm like, look, just go do it. Learn the language of business, and then you can figure out what you want to do later. So it was that. I think it was just a dissatisfaction going to work every day. Just, man, it's just not fulfilling to me in that way. And
kind
then
of
also, yeah, absolutely. And then the second thing being my wife got tired of hearing me talk about starting a business. So, honestly, I specifically remember we sitting down at a restaurant in North Raleigh and one night, and she just said, look, we've got to do this or you've got to stop talking about it because I'm getting tired of hearing you talk about how discontent you are and how you've shared with me this dream that you have. You really need to do something with it. So it was the moral support from my wife that kind of, I don't know, just that extra little push
kick
out the door.
Butt.
Yeah, exactly, which we all need from time to time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how did that, I guess as a man, how did that make you feel to know that your wife, the lady that you chose to be with forever, she just stepped up and said, hey, let's do it.
Oh, man.
Like, that's got to be a great feeling.
It is, you know, like that's a huge, marriage is difficult in many ways, but it's also so rewarding in many ways. And having somebody that is rooting for you, there's nothing else like it in life. So, you know, even if this whole thing fails, like I know Kelsey's still going to love me, accept me. Mm-hmm. We'll go back to the drawing board and figure it out. There's a little bit of pride of man, I wish I would have done this maybe before we met. But again, that's just what life has.
Yeah. Nice. Well, and I think you, Corey, experienced quite the opposite.
I experienced the opposite.
It was
I didn't get that type of support. But I had a foundation, which was, you know, if no one believes in me, I believe in myself. So, you know.
That's good.
But, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Corey's, I don't know if you've noticed this or not yet, but Corey is, unflappable. I've not ever heard him say an unkind word about anybody. I've never seen him get overly excited or upset about anything. The guy's just dialed in, knows where he's going. Knows what he wants.
He should run for president someday. I don't know.
I don't think I can take that stress.
We were actually, you know, today talking about, so Corey put some pictures of his son online standing next to the vending machines, the candy machines that he's teaching his son how to collect money from. And I'm looking at that thinking, there needs to be a Corey Jeffries Foundation for Childhood Entrepreneurship. Because there's a space for that. And there's even, that's something I as a parent would love to impart on my kids.
And just to reiterate that from a third-party perspective, I think what you guys are doing is fantastic.
Thank you.
I think, and maybe I'm jumping ahead into the conversation, but, you know, for me, my parents weren't entrepreneurs. It wasn't something that I was trained to do. Perhaps I just had this inkling to hustle, you know, airheads as a kid and wanted to, you know, make some money so I could just buy baseball cards or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like we come into the world and we're 7-pound, 6-ounce entrepreneur. Like, it's a learned thing. Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, I can see that, man. I can see, like, instead of Alex Lemonade Stand, it's like Corey's Kids Bubblegum Machine. Or something.
Corey's
like
Kids. There's the name for it right there. Kids. It rolls off the tongue. Corey's Kids. So, I share your view on marriage and that level of support. Even with the podcast, there's been times where I'm tinkering with the laptop for a while. We're running Linux, right? Where it's just, this is an old piece of equipment, which also is kind of fun. But that said, I'm tinkering with it at 9:30 at night. My wife's like, why don't you just spend a couple $100 and get a new one? And that's really, you know, she's a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah. It's got to make you feel good.
For real. And for her to offer up that kind of support, like, hey, dip into our personal finances. And, you know, I know you love this. I know you love doing this. Go after it. But speaking of old pieces of equipment, I was looking at, the first thing I saw when I was looking at the website, I'm scrolling down. It's a very nice looking website. That picture of your rig is amazing. Right. Like, there's a whole story, right there, I think, that's very compelling for people. And I read a little bit about it already. Corey read a little bit about it. But can you tell us about how you got that truck, how you built the rig, all of it?
Where'd it come from?
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is a hack podcast, right?
So that's right.
Built from scratch.
Bend, break, or hack.
Yeah. Craigslist, man. It's the greatest tool ever, right? And it's free, right? It's like you can find It's amazing what you can find on Craigslist. Yeah. Kind of scary, too, but whatever.
It's amazing what kind of trouble people can get
exactly.
on Craigslist.
But that's where it happened, man.
What area of North Carolina did it come
from? It actually came from South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Right outside Rock Hill. And I had looked. And actually had another friend that, like, flips cars.
Okay.
And he was looking for me. And we looked for a good 6 months. I had this vision of what... You know, because I think, and maybe this is a life lesson, as we're creating businesses, opportunities, podcasts, you have to answer the one question, how are you different? And for me, when I was thinking about the ice cream business, and even more so an ice cream truck, I in the back of my mind, how are you different? And so I had this vision of what this rig could look like, and that's where the idea for the old vintage truck pulling an old vintage camper, and that's really where it came from. And so it was just a matter of going out and finding the right vintage truck, and then we actually had the camper built out of Ohio. There's a guy up there that does like
old, prefabricated campers,
restores old ones, because you know that's kind of a trendy thing right now, and I feel like we're on the front end of that trend. There's lots of people that are trying to do that same thing, so. Yeah, it has this sweet, you know, it's a 1965 Ford pickup truck and, you know, just immaculate and this camper. So, yeah, I get a lot of thumbs up and in particular questions about it from old guys that just want to know that.
Oh, yeah.
So has anybody asked to buy it from you?
Oh, it seems like every time we take it out, either it's an unsolicited offer or they want to know how much or, you know, it's fun. It's a fun, honestly, you know, it's just like any sort of marketing or branding tool. It helps us sell ice cream.
Yep.
And honestly, that was the marketing budget. You know, since day one, like this. Okay, we're going out. We're going to spend the money to do this. And
there's this club of like old guys who have like these old hot rods. Have you ever took your truck to one of those shows? They do it like every once a month.
I haven't done it's like Cars and Coffee or whatever. Or at least I've heard of events like that. We actually were supposed to do a big classic car show this past spring, but it rained the whole thing out. So I was really. It was like. I was so looking forward to it, but hopefully we can make that happen in 2017.
Yeah. Nice. And, I mean, it's interesting you talk about the idea of Americana, and then you see this Ford from the 60s, the paint job, all of it just pulls you back to a different time. Did you have the truck? I mean, the truck did not look like that when you bought it, right?
It did.
You're kidding
me. It was a find. Like, yeah, it was a godsend, honestly, like, because, again, we had looked for 6 months, and just, we had found a couple things that might have worked, but I've had three mechanics since I bought it look at it, and they all say the same thing. This is if you ever want to sell this, I would buy it.
Yeah.
Like, the mechanic is saying that.
So the thing looks like it was in a time capsule
and it was in a garage, like two brothers that restored old cars. They just had three or four of them, and I think they just needed some of the money back, and, wow. Yeah, they felt good about selling it to me, and I felt good about buying it from them. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, this is why I'm buying it. It's not going to sit in the garage. It's going to be a work truck, and we're going to sell ice cream that I make. And they were happy to sell it to me.
Do you feel bad putting the mileage on it, driving it all over?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a ticking time bomb. I don't know. That's maybe a bad analogy, because driving down the highway.
Yeah, or the ice cream man coming through the neighborhood.
You're right. But, you know, it's an old truck, and, you know, we try to keep it in shape and tuned up, but it runs strong, so hopefully it'll last us a good while.
Yeah.
So have you guys had to cancel many events or any events because of the age of the truck, or is it pretty sturdy?
I was trying to remember, and I hate to say this, but I think we actually had to bail one time at the Frontier, like one of the little food truck radios here. We actually had to bail because there was some oil leakage.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, we didn't feel comfortable getting it out that day. But it got fixed, and we're moving on. But, yeah, a couple of times, but nothing major.
What would be your plan if you had to get another, you know, something else to pull the trailer?
Well, I will say I'll give you a little teaser. How about another little audience
teaser? All right.
This is
going to be a Triangle Cast exclusive.
And people have suggested this before, but I've toyed with the idea of having this little vintage ice cream fleet of vehicles. So I actually have been in conversations with some restoration places about a potential second vehicle.
Nice.
So,
same colors?
Oh, yeah, you know, that's the brand consistency. You know, yeah. For me, it's like you have to stay consistent across all your platforms. And so, I mean, there's something about that kind of teal, aqua color that's just universal that most people like. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
I agree 100%. So that'd be neat. It might not even be a truck.
It might be, yeah, not even a truck.
Okay.
Different little concept. So we'll
okay.
see.
That's awesome. And so with a fleet, does that mean additional employees and the ability to work more than one location at a time?
Yeah, and that's, you know, when you guys talk about growing a business, you know, starting an entrepreneurial endeavor, that's what it's about. It's how do you scale it? How do you, you know, I know you guys talk a lot about, you know, passive income in the sense that it's minimal labor on your part to keep this thing going. But that's the thing, as you scale a business, you have to start thinking very critically about what you're good at, what only the founder or manager or, you know, very much defining the parameters of a job and the responsibilities within a company. So we're just trying to figure that out. That's a hard thing as an entrepreneur when you're bootstrapping, when you're looking at the cash in the bank, and you're like, well, do I get that second vehicle or that, you know, fourth, fifth bounce house, you know, like, you know, you really start to think strategically about, you know, how do you grow this thing and not work yourself into the grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
so,
sorry.
Far as going to the brick and mortar location, so like with me, I have a storage unit and it's like less than $100 a month. So you're going to a brick and mortar location, which is a lot more. And you know, at a storage location, I'm not tied down; I could leave at any moment. How, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your fear rate of like things not working out or, you know, something going wrong with that, with the brick and mortar location?
Oh man, that's such a complex question. Well, we'll share a little story about when we first started Two Roosters. So I mentioned the trailer was built in Ohio. So I was actually taking a trip up there to do kind of final inspections to make sure it was going to be exactly what we wanted. And I'm a pretty even keel guy like you, Corey. Like, I'm pretty chill. Like, nothing really gets under my skin or stressed out even. And for some reason, I don't know if it was because this was all so new or if this was just such a big thing in life. We're putting a lot of money on the line to do this. But I actually, in retrospect, I had this huge anxiety attack during that process. I flew up to Ohio, checked it out, flew home on a Sunday. Sunday evening, I wake up, or Sunday morning, I should say. I wake up at like 2, 3 in the morning, and I have this incredible chest pain. Mm-hmm. And I've never experienced anything like that. And I don't know if it was like bad pizza at the airport on the way home or you know, like, yeah, just like something weird, but it felt like my chest was going to explode. And I wake my wife up in the middle of the night and I say, Kels, like, I don't know what's happening to me right now. And so I try to let it die down and didn't. And so she rushed me to the emergency room. I stayed there for like 30 minutes. All the while, like, I thought literally my chest was going to explode. And I get into a room and I lay down. The doctor comes, checks out all the vitals. He can't find anything wrong.
Don't you hate that?
Yeah, like nothing. And I'm just laying there like so frustrated. And all of a sudden, I rolled over to one side and the whole pain just went away. It was just like the whole thing just lifted. And I think maybe perhaps I was, like, in an environment that I knew was safe, that nothing, okay, at the hospital, nothing, I can't be in a safer place. And in retrospect, yeah, talking to some doctors, it was an anxiety attack.
So,
yeah.
And you didn't necessarily feel it creeping up, it just happened all of a sudden.
I woke in the middle of the night after that kind of stressful experience of going up, checking it out, you know, laying money on the table, like that whole thing. And so back to your original question, Corey, of the fear involved in the brick and mortar, there definitely is fear, but I've overcome that one instance. And so for me, it's almost gravy. You know, it's like I've already experienced starting from zero, like just a concept in my head, to a full-blown business. And now it's just another phase of the business. So for me, there is definitely stress and fear involved in that. The numbers are bigger, but you know, it's just having the confidence to say, you know what, I did this from zero, took it through one phase, and now this is just another phase. Mm-hmm. So different stresses, but not the incredible, just overwhelming sense of starting something from zero.
Right.
It'd be different than owing your father-in-law $200,000 or owing a bunch of investors money or owing a bank.
Oh, so absolutely. Well, yeah.
So that's one of the advantages that you've gotten from bootstrapping, from putting it together with your own finances. So is it safe to assume that you, along that time, became profitable and profitable enough to make that investment into the brick-and-mortar location, the additional fleet?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a balance of any entrepreneurial or business endeavor. You know, it's knowing kind of when to grow and when to wait. You know, and that's mm-hmm. a tough thing, especially in our economy and our world. It moves so quickly. So to answer your question, your original question of we've been able to bootstrap, we started from our finances, Kelsey and I saved, and we started and we grew it to a place where if we sold everything we have and just said, okay, we're done, like we've basically doubled our money in 2 years. So, you know, that to me, that's kind of the healthy place to be. Yep. We've got some assets, and if need be, we could just totally just walk away from it, which I don't want to do, obviously. I want it to grow.
Yes.
But now it's to a place where, you know, it's the balance of how much do you keep in reserves and how much do you actually spend on growing the business? And then even further, do you take on additional either investors or loans or outside money effectively to make the business grow? And so we're kind of in that weird place where we have enough to grow it to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
but to make it grow beyond that, we'll need to take on some additional money, whether that's, you know, and maybe this is a conversation for another day about how do you finance a startup, or, you know, how do you bootstrap if you don't have $100, you know, like where does that money come from? I know you guys are huge advocates of starting from zero and building it literally from zero. But right now, we're just trying to figure out what that best route, whether that's family, whether mm-hmm. that's friends, whether that's fools, whether that's banks, you know, whether it's do we open up? Because right now, I own the company outright, and so open up ownership for a certain dollar amount? So
you guys could go on Shark Tank.
You know, we have that suggested a lot.
So who would be your target go-to person if you guys did go on Shark Tank?
Oh, man. I think Mark Cuban, man. I think he's a big basketball junkie, so I think, as am I, and so I think we could connect on that level, and then I could sell him on it.
Strange enough, I would choose Kevin O'Leary, and I don't know why.
You don't know why?
I don't know why.
Can't quite articulate
it. I can't put it up
there, something about Kevin O'Leary that you trust.
Maybe he just likes money like me. I don't know.
Is that what it is? So to get a little, you mentioned that you own it all outright, and Corey makes fun of me to say going granular. To micro down a little bit, are you guys, did you choose S-Corp, LLC? How did you choose to incorporate?
Well, this is my CPA training coming out. So, and I have to caveat, like you did, Corey, on one episode, no advice can be taken, you know, to the bank. So go ask a practicing CPA.
Yeah, and probably pay them. Pay them to give you the advice.
Yes, but what we have done, I set up an LLC just because it's the easiest.
Yeah,
it's way easy. Anybody can do it. I've had a couple of iterations of the legal entity, but the very first one I did on LegalZoom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think at some point, you know, that's a great resource for people that are starting from zero. But, you know, as you get a little more sophisticated, it's probably good to involve, you know, an attorney. But, yeah, we did an LLC. And then even within the LLC, in terms of being taxed, you can keep it as effectively a sole proprietorship, or you can be taxed as an S-Corp. So there, I don't want to get too heady with all that, but we're still trying to figure out what the best tax strategy is mm-hmm. for the business and for our family. So it's, you know, that's the kind of stuff that is not sexy when it's, you know, talk about starting a business and having this sexy truck, like talking about that stuff.
Well, yeah, and you're right. And I think it is and it's not. I had a conversation with my wife, and I was telling Corey this. I had a conversation with my wife a couple nights ago. She's getting very much into photography. She's getting very good at it. And she says, I really want to start a business, but then I'd have to know how to do all of this stuff, and who would I even go to? And I look at her like, do you ever listen to the podcast? Do you ever check it out? Or do you just, I think she hears enough of my voice at home every single evening. But that kind of stuff, that's one of the exercises Corey and I are going to do in the near future is, this is what she wants to do. Here's where she is. Corey, how would you go, you know, step by step by step? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that that entire process is so intimidating to them. And I would even go as far as say that that's why I never formally became an entrepreneur. I mean, besides crippling student loan debt, I never dove into being an entrepreneur. Sure. So do you guys right now, are you the only employee? Do you have multiple employees? And then the follow-up question to that is, once you get the brick and mortar, how quickly and how will you scale up?
Yeah, great question. And again, those are the hard choices and decisions that as a growing business that you have to make. So for the last 2 years, I've been really the only employee. My wife, Kelsey, has been gracious in this startup phase to lend her time and energy to, you know, dip ice cream, take money, do all the ice cream related things. But she has her own career. She's made it well known. And maybe this is another topic of podcast for you guys. How do you balance, you know, relationships and pursuing a business dream?
Yeah, because now she's your business partner, and that's a different conversation.
That is altogether. Mm-hmm. So I've tried to force her back into, you know, just stay, you know, I don't, and she has no intention of doing, you know, leaving. She's got a great career, great business going. So she has no interest in joining Two Roosters full time, which is fine. She's, you know, keeping the lights on at home for a time. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, in terms of employees, we had some seasonal help. So, you know, it's a great seasonal business for college kids, mm-hmm. high school kids, ice cream. And,
Did you bring them on as contractors, or did you bring them on as actual employees?
Yeah, you can work that several ways. You know, it gets kind of squirrely with, especially with parent conversations, of like, okay, I'm not withholding taxes, right. but at the end, your kid is going to be responsible for paying these.
We're going to put them on a 1099.
Yeah, exactly. But we just found that, you know, just paying the payroll taxes is
a lot easier.
Yeah, and there's so many cool tools out there, you know, just software tools that make it pretty easy
to calculate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
now I did have one question, just to go back to you being the CPA. Are you the CPA for your company, or did you hire someone to take care of that portion?
Well, that is one advantage, I suppose, to having that training, is that I can keep the books without too much issue. But, you know, it's always nice to have some level of, I don't know, of certainty. So having kind of someone over your shoulder just to make sure everything's cool. So we utilize one for our family and the businesses, because my wife has a business too. So, you know, we wanted to have that additional layer of security. Because, you know, you don't want Uncle Sam or the IRS knocking on your door. That's, I would probably end up back in the hospital. Which, you know, it's part of the world. But, you know, just making sure, cross your T's and dot your I's.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned seasonal business, and Corey and I off microphone have had quite a few conversations about his business being affected by the cold. So you're going to have your cost for a brick and mortar. You're going to be paying for that every month, or however you have the agreement worked out. What will you be doing in the winter months to? And maybe that's a deeper question for this episode. I don't know.
Hot chocolate.
Yeah, hot chocolate. I had tossed around that idea. Well, it used to be that I love snowboarding, and snowboarding is like the worst hobby to have as a CPA because of that seasonality. But now it's opposite season. So, yeah, a lot of snowboarding, a lot of winter vacations.
Leaving it up.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you don't get many of those. But, yeah, you know, I think to me it's always been a question of, you know, how are you different? And then also do one thing and do it well.
Yes.
You know, not extending your brand, not extending your creativity into things that you shouldn't be dabbling into, even though it looks, you know, incentivizing or it looks enticing, but just doing one thing. And for us, or for me, that's ice cream. So I think knowing, like, if you can know and you can plan and have a strategy for how you make it through those cold months, sell as much ice cream as you can when it's warm.
Yeah.
And also being in North Carolina, you know, the winter season is fairly short. So
I think you just gave us the title for the episode.
Yeah.
Sell as much ice cream as you can when it's warm.
Yeah.
I mean, you just look at that as a business concept in general for, and I mean, that's more than just ice cream there.
And honestly, you know, there, you don't think about it really, but there's a tremendous amount of businesses that are highly seasonal.
Yeah.
I mean, even like high school refereeing, you know, like, you know, during the summer, the kids don't play sports, so right. you don't referee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teachers.
Yeah, teachers. Yeah, absolutely. So everything kind of has their ups and downs in terms of busyness and revenue generation and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. And I think we're getting close to about 45 minutes on time.
Yeah, about another 3 minutes.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there's a bunch of other questions that we have for you. One of the big ones is, and I don't want to just make assumptions, so you've quit your day job completely?
Is
that right? Okay, wow. So this is now, this full is time. Your sole means of income. This is...
For a year and a half, I was... bootlegging it. I was working crazy hours doing both CPA work and hustling ice cream on the side. So for about 18 months, I did it, and it was extremely painful.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. And so we grew it to a place where we felt good saying, okay. I was having to say no to so many things ice cream related that I decided, you know what? This is what I want to do.
Yeah. Nice. That was the conversation we were having with Mike York, the writer, as well, as he had people calling him, and he still already had a 60-hour-a-week job.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned several times about what do you do differently, and from the outside looking in, I can see the branding's different. Corey and I were talking about how you guys made pizza-flavored ice cream.
Yes. Can you give us just a little bit on that real quick?
Yeah. Well, it was inspired by a shop up in Philadelphia that I'm good friends with the owners, and they had kind of a version of the pizza ice cream.
Okay.
And so I reached out to them and said, hey, can I use this for various things? And they said, yeah, and here's actually how you can one-up us. So it was really helpful that they just said yes to that. But yeah, I mean, think about how you would make cheese pizza without crust, and that's pretty much ice cream.
That's outstanding. Yeah,
maybe you can introduce that to Cookout.
Yeah, the next milkshake.
Pizza milkshake.
Side note, that might actually be a soft introduction to me in ice cream, because when I was in school, I went through the Cookout milkshake list, and I've had every milkshake at Cookout.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you're talking about even back then... You were pretty passionate about
this without
stuff.
Even knowing. Like, ice cream was just a part of life for me.
So before, when you were putting this all together, you're about to buy the truck, you're about to go on the road, what was the one thing in your mind that you were going to do differently than anybody else?
The flavors.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do some pretty crazy flavors. I mean, we do the classics, you know, just as good as anybody, and we put the best premium products we do in our flavors. Hmm. But to me, it's about collaboration as well. So, for instance, like, right now, we have two that have been really popular around the holidays. We do a coffee and bourbon flavor,
nice.
Which both the coffee is brewed in Raleigh, and it's actually a liqueur, but the bourbon liqueur is made in Durham. So for us, it's about having these fun flavors, but also about promoting other businesses.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then the other one is a whiskey and candied pecan ice cream.
Wow.
So the whiskey is made in Chapel Hill, and I candy the pecans, and... It's delicious.
Yeah.
Wow.
So do you have other local businesses that are supporting you? I in my mind, I think of like a Tribeca Tavern, for instance, where they say everything's sourced locally, local vendors, etc. Do you have, I'm sorry for the two-part question.
Okay.
I keep doing this to you. Do you have local vendors that are supporting you in the same way that you're supporting them? And have you ever thought about restaurant distribution?
We get inquiries all the time for wholesale.
Wow.
For us, though... It's a little bit of a two-pronged business approach, because retail is very much different than wholesale. It's the distribution aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really figuring out, is that a pivot we would want to make in the business at some point? So to me, it's a simple matter of getting it from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of little regulations in how you do that. But we get requests all the time for, hey, we would love to put this in our restaurant, our cafe. We've even had some breweries that want to do some beer ice creams.
Yeah.
So, it's fun.
Like, it could be like, for instance, I'll just name one that I like. Like, Lone Rider could say they want a Shotgun Betty ice cream for a promotional event.
Yep.
And that's something that you guys have considered doing.
Yep. And we've actually done it a few times. We've made some, we partnered with Trophy Brewing in Raleigh.
Okay.
We've made some Trophy beer ice cream along with Raleigh Brewing. So, yeah, we get amped up about those partnerships. We love it.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
All right, well, we're coming close to the end of the show here. Now, we do quotes at the end of each show. I don't know if that was shared with you or not. Did you share that with him?
I don't. He said he listened to all of them, so he might have heard them already.
Might not. Do you have a favorite quote?
And if we're putting you on the spot, we can just edit it out later. So.
No, you know, I am a big fan of Zig Ziglar. I don't know if you guys know Zig, but or know of him. He's passed, but his stuff lives on. Anyways, he always says, I believe, maybe this is not misquoting him so much, but something to the effect of, you can get everything out of life if you just help enough people get what they want.
Nice.
That just rings for me all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. It's also a concept of like service leadership and so many other aspects of life.
Yep.
So I think you've been very generous with your time. We've asked you a bunch of questions. Corey, do you have any more questions that you wanted to ask Jared before we wrap
I have
up?
One more question as far as your business model. Do you plan to keep it independent? Because, I mean, I know you mentioned investors. Like, for me personally, my goal is to keep my businesses as independent as possible so that I can do what I want to with them. Do you have that same mindset, or are you more open to maybe partner with investors and giving up control of your business?
You know, I think it's those critical pivot points in a business that those decisions get made. And so we're still so small right now that it's just like we're just plowing everything right back into the business.
Right.
I would love to think that I'm reading this fantastic book called Small Giants. Yeah. And it's about intentionally staying small.
Right.
And in the culture that you create with a small enterprise. So that for me is huge. We love the local community engagement, the collaborations we mentioned. So, yeah, I would love to keep it, grow it, but keep it small.
Yeah.
That will be a balance.
Okay. And keep a culture.
Keep the culture, for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, one last question. Awesome. And me and Jason were joking about this. Me and you are going to have to do a partnership this summer.
Bounce houses and ice cream.
Bounce houses and ice cream. It's a kit. I mean,
that's too easy, man. That's way too easy. We got to do something harder than that. That's a no-brainer. So, yes, 100%. Maybe we can do some social media stuff with it. I love it. Let's
bring it right out here to the parking lot.
Oh, yeah. Easy enough, man.
Corey and I, last week, we were introducing ourselves to some of the people that run the frontier because we want to have them on to talk about the concept, to share it, and even to meet some of the entrepreneurs that work here. And in the middle of the conversation, Corey's, you can see him kind of like listening, shaking his head, and he looks her dead in the eye and he says, so you all ever use bounce houses?
I love it, man.
There he goes. Yeah, entrepreneur at heart.
Always have the selling lens on, right?
Yeah. Well, Jared, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, man.
And everybody out there, thank you for listening. You can obviously find us at trianglecast.com.
That's Instagram, trianglecast, at Twitter. Our handle is at trianglecast.
And Jared, how can people find you, and how can they figure out when they can taste your ice cream?
Yeah, tworoosters.com, T-W-O Roosters, and we got all the socials covered. So if you just search for Two Roosters on any of the platforms, it's pretty easy to find us.
They'll find you. Nice. Well, awesome. Thanks again for coming on. I'm Jason Juno.
Corey Jeffries, entrepreneur.
And Jared Plummer, ice cream.
Extraordinaire.
Ice cream master.
Aficionado.
Aficionado.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right.